Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 30th, 2009, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I am Chris Cosenza.
And I am Scott Long.
Scott, it's great to have you back. Not really back, since we're still on Skype today, but it's good to have you back in the vicinity where I know I can still drive over there and smack you around if I have to.
And I tell you, Chris, you're lucky that I'm here.
How come?
Well, you know, and I know how much you look forward to my non-poker stories on
yes,
the show.
Yes.
So, you know, I always try to find some way of weaving it into poker so you don't kick all my ass, just half of it. So I'm going to try to do that with this story. You know, because I called in last week from I was down in South Florida for a bunch of stuff. And after the show, I go over and I visit the new Calder Racecourse poker room.
Yes, studs.
Yes, yes, good room, good room. Had a great party there, had fun. And I'm driving home, and this is where the poker
non-poker
connection, yeah, stops. So there you go. That was your little poker tease.
Thanks, buddy.
But I'm driving home, and you know, I get on the turnpike. You know, one of our good friends down there, Nick Sordell, says, "Oh yeah, yeah, you just take the turnpike straight up to your hotel." And my GPS said the same thing. I'm like, "All right, great, cool." Get on the turnpike, and I pull up to the booth there, right?
Yeah.
And it is 50 cents. Oh, sorry, 75 cents, exact change. No person sitting there. So I'm like, WTF? I'm on vacation. This isn't my car. It's not like I have a big, you know, that McDonald's slush fund there where I can grab my coins from. So fortunately, I remember, Chris, that I just went through a toll on the way down there for $1.25. So I had 75 cents in the cup holder.
Whoa.
Problem solved, right?
Well, I guess.
So I reach into the cup holder. I pick up the coins. And to go to throw them into the little cage thing there, and I drop a quarter between the seat of the car. So now I just have 50 cents. There's a guy behind me honking. I'm trying to squeeze my big fat hand down between the seats in this Chrysler 300, and I can't get to it.
Oh my God.
So I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm a quarter short. So finally I turn on the reverse lines, and I look out the window, and I'm waving the guy back. And I'm able to pull in. They have like a little building thing there. So I pull into the parking lot there. I try to find the quarter. No good. So I see there's a cleaning lady washing the windows in the building. So I go knock on it. And she's like, just drive through.
I know. What the hell?
And I'm like, drive through? It's 75 cents. I've got 50 cents. And so she's shouting through the window, and it's hard to hear. And then she's like, you know, just call the number, and you can pay it later. And I'm like, really? That's how it works? I mean, I've never been in this situation, right? And I'm like in a rental car, and the last thing I want to know is get a ticket and have it go to Thrifty and have them kick my butt, too. So I'm screaming back and forth with this lady. Some other toll worker pulls up and parks a car, and she's like, just drive through! And I'm like, really? She's like, yeah, just pay the next lady. And then so the other lady comes out, and they give me a card. So I go back to the car, and I take one more look, and I find my quarter.
Oh, jeez.
Pay my coins. So I don't have to worry about just driving through or none of that stuff. But now I'm on the turnpike, right?
Yeah.
And I have no more change, obviously. So what happens if I hit this thing again? So I'm in paranoia all the way up there. Of course, I could tell already from you. You're like, this is not a big problem at all. You just drive through.
Well, they just told you that beforehand, too, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I'm going to listen to the cleaning lady?
but you had the toll booth worker tell you that too.
Well, I don't know if she's a toll booth worker. She kind of looked like one. I mean, I didn't ask for ID. But so I'm driving, so I get the next stop, and it's a dollar, and there's a lady there, and I'm like, ooh, thank God. So I gave her a 10, and I'm like, hey, I have no coins. No coins whatsoever. If I'm going to need any more coins, you're going to have to give me some coins. And she's like, where are you going? I'm like, Atlantic Boulevard. She's like, oh, you don't need coins. I'm like, are you sure? I have no coins. I'm going to need coins. And she's like, no, it'll be fine, sir. I'm like, all right. So I pull through the toll booth, and literally 10 feet from the toll booth is my exit. So I got off and I'm safe. But yes, for a terrifying 25 minutes, I was stuck on the Florida Turnpike wondering if I was ever going to get back to see you again.
I have to admit, you are a world-class spaz. You are not a globetrotter by any means, man. You do a lot of traveling, but man, you are a spaz.
Well, I'm just a law-abiding citizen.
I know, and you know what? That's a good thing, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm proud to have you as a partner over a quarter. You know what I mean? I mean, I think that's fantastic. But you know, one of the problems with you going away is that I have to hold down the fort here.
Yeah, and I imagine you probably generate poker stories, since of course this is the NEA Poker Cast.
Yes.
So please save our listeners from the hell that is Scott Long by.
Well,
poker tales.
You and I have made friends with a guy named Antonio who has a poker show down in West Palm Beach called Poker Wars, and it's on actual radio. It's not this, you know, pretender kind of wannabe stuff that we do. And
yes.
You and I are on the show like every week. One of us is on the show, and you were on the first two, and then because you were going away, I said I'd be on the next two, and I started to try to figure out what I wanted to talk to this guy about. So I said, well, let me go to Derby Lane over the weekend, try to get back some of my losses from the home game, which, by the way, didn't happen. I'm on the worst run of my life. But we don't want to talk about that right now. So I'm at Derby Lane. I'm like, maybe something will happen today that I could talk about on Poker Wars, you know, on the show. And I'm in the sixth seat, and I look over at a table next to me. And, Scott, this is the most grotesque thing I have ever seen in my life. Now, I know there are other grotesque things that have happened at poker tables around the world. You know, Gambit brought up an incident at the home game where someone at the Commerce was actually masturbating at a table. And
yeah.
They were passing out wet naps and
yeah.
stuff. And then I heard, of course, on one of our shows way back when we had the dealer guy on, he was telling us about someone that actually urinated on the table and on the dealer,
let's not forget Phil Helmuth was being naked in ESPN body issue.
Yeah, so
probably,
I mean,
the worst of all of them.
These things are so grotesque, but I haven't witnessed two of those three things, so I can't really say that they're the most grotesque things I've ever seen. But I'm in the five seat, and I look to my left, and the table next to me, there's a rather large woman.
Okay.
And she's kind of straddling the chair, kind of like leaning back. She's got like four or five drinks in front of her, and I'm thinking, oh, this is the lady Scott saw at the Venetian.
Yeah, my buddy, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, no, that can't be her. You know, it's impossible to be her, you know. I'm staring at her to see if she's like, you know, familiar to me, and she kind of looked like Whoopi Goldberg, but it wasn't really Whoopi Goldberg. So next thing I know is I see her turn her head, look at me, right? She puts her index finger on her nostril, looks down to the ground, and blows the largest snot rocket I have ever seen on the floor.
Oh, my God.
On the floor. Now, I know that the carpet at Derby Lane is reminiscent of, like, the Las Vegas type of carpet that's loud. And
right,
she must have thought her boogie would blend into
yep,
it or something.
Yep.
And then she turns back and she's like, all right, deal me in. And this was at a table next to me. You know, it wasn't even at my table, thank God.
Oh, my gosh.
But what is someone thinking when they turn to their left, put their finger on their nose, and blow a snot rocket, which, you know, it looked like an oyster coming out of its shell.
Oh, my God. I can only imagine.
I know exactly
what you're talking about.
Why would anyone do this, Scott?
Just no self-respect.
And you know she had 1,000 napkins with her because she had 1,000 drinks in front of her. She could have just blown the napkin.
Wow. Wow. So, oh, you know, I'm grossed out right here. I'm I was going to try to eat my lunch during the podcast, but no.
And, of course, then the next most grotesque thing after that was when I went bust flopping the nuts and having someone go river, river to make a flush or runner, runner. But, you know, whatever. I just couldn't believe it. I've never seen anything like that. And, of course, when I brought it up on the show, the guys were laughing and they started talking about their stories. But, oh, God, Scott, even to this day, it just sends shivers down my spine seeing that over and over again. I had nightmares.
Well, I tell you, I was going to add a T-shirt to our cafe press store that said, "If you have time to play poker, you have time to shower," because I've been running into some capital BO lately. But maybe BO is not the problem. Maybe it's when you come to the table, bring a hanky. Maybe that's the here. Borrow this shirt. Use this shirt.
Don't use the floor. Use this shirt.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, my God. It was pretty gross.
Well, I feel terrible, buddy, that you had to witness that because I was out of town. But,
All right. Well, you know, you were out of town, and, you know, you were put on the spot by the toll booth capital of America. But I want to put you on the spot a little bit here. And if you don't know the answer, I don't think anyone's going to fault you. But I just want to see for my own... You know, I just wonder how far things have come or fallen for this.
Final Jeopardy.
Yes, I'm going to ask you a question. Now, it was a year ago that, you know, we had a discussion on the show that the delayed final table was good for poker, and it was good for – it was going to make these guys household names, and everyone was excited about it, and everyone would know about it. And sure enough, last year, everyone knew who everyone was at the table because it was the first time this happened.
Right.
But I'm putting you on the spot now, Scott. It's November 9 coming up again. Next week we're going to talk to Kevin Schaffel, which we all know who he is for me and you because we've talked about him on the show, and he's our state guy. He's our cover story, so you know who he is.
Right, right.
And, of course, you know who Phil Ivey is, and you know who Shulman is.
Right.
But I want to know, Scott, like Final Jeopardy, and actually we'll probably turn this more into like a red light challenge from Cash Cab. Can you name the other six guys? And I want to give you a little bit of time here, but I'll give you about a minute. Can you name the other six guys? Now, you're a publisher of a magazine. It's been in our magazine. And I'm just curious. Now, I watch it on TV, and I know you don't, so I would know because of that. And I wrote the story that had their names in it, and you proofed it. So you should know. You're the publisher of a poker magazine. So what do you think? Do you know the other guys?
All right. I will not get all of them, but obviously Darvin Moon's a chip leader.
Okay.
Joe Cada is one of them, right?
Yeah, it's two.
Some Axelrod kind of guy.
No, I can't answer that because that could be one of many of these other guys.
Oh, excellent. I combined the two of them together. Kind of like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
You got my French player mixed with my New York player. Well, you got my New York player mixed with my French player.
Right, well, there's some kind of Saout guy who I pronounce.
Yes. Antoine Saout.
All right. Some guy with a B name, Burliner. Burliner.
All right, you know what? I'll even give you that one. That's Steve. Steve Baglighter. I'll give you that one. You have two more.
Wow.
Although the Axl Rose one may be one. I don't know.
You know, I can picture them, but no, I will give up on my cash cab here, short of the money. You're going to have to kick me out of the cab.
Well,
hopefully near a bar.
You're probably in the red light challenge. You probably would have passed. They probably would have made you get 4 out of 6, and you did that. So you did pretty well. I was just curious to see if, you know, now it's the second year, and it really has died down a little bit. I mean, you could have rattled off all the names from last year's final, I'm sure, when we were there then, but now... It's really not, so I'm wondering, really, the only surprise is that we don't know who won the whole thing, or do you think it's still as strong as last year?
Well, again, if you go back to the go to the tape.
Okay.
Last year, I believe my reaction last year was that, while these nine players may not be household names across the country, they will be local celebrities in their area, and as you mentioned, Kevin Schaffel has become a celebrity in Florida because of us.
Yeah.
And the coverage he's gotten down in South Florida from other folks down there as well, too. And that's really, I think, what they're getting at here. I think it's a stretch to say that these nine players are going to be household names everywhere.
Okay.
But the fact that, you know, these folks, like last year, Dennis Phillips got to throw out the first pitch at a Cardinals game.
Yeah.
Stuff like that would have never happened before. And so that's 43,000 drunk St. Louis people that had never heard his name, now that at least had heard it at that point. And, you know, add that all up and maybe it's worth something. So that's what I'll say. And then also, I guess, on top of that, you know, I'm sure they love the fact that Phil Ivey made the final table this year.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, when you bring that 4,000-pound poker elephant into the final table, he's going to suck up a lot of the coverage that would have gone to these other people in the national media, too. So
great points.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are all great points.
I think it's still serving its purpose. How's that?
Okay, that's cool. I just want
to
see how you felt.
Even though I can only get 6.5 out of the 9.
All right, well, we were looking for Eric Buckman.
Yes, that's who I meant.
And James Aikenhead.
Yes, that's what I meant.
So Aikenhead was your Axelrod guy. Yeah. Axel Rose guy. All right, so anyway, those are your November 9, and next week we'll have an interview with Kevin Schaffel and... last night, Scott, I really thought that the entire Antiup Nation were going to, like, you know, mutiny on the bounty type thing here. They're going to turn on us and just, like, never listen to the show again. And for who all we know, maybe people aren't listening anymore anyway because of our Apes Free Roll.
Wow. Talk about crazy night.
Man, it was crazy.
You know, and I called you, like, at 7 o'clock because I knew you weren't feeling well, yeah. And you were on the fence as to whether you were actually going to play or not. But I had to call you because, you know, I was doing some work, and I just clicked on the tournament lobby real quick just to see how many people had signed up, expecting, you know, maybe 100 or so. At 7 o'clock, Chris, 2 hours before this thing started, there were 360 players signed up for this thing. So I had to call you, and I'm like, wow! This is insane. Of course, then you threw cold water on me. Oh, yeah, we've had a free roll before that. Lots more than that. I'm like, oh, really? That must have been the one I missed. But I believe at the end we had 1,337 people register for the free roll. Probably about 27 of them actual live people that were going to play. And, you know, on behalf of the nation... I mean, I don't know what more we could say. I mean, this was just wrong on so many levels.
Yeah, it was really embarrassing, if anything, for a lot of people. I mean, you know, and the funny thing is, you know, I started feeling a little better. I was like, you know what, the Yankees are on tonight at the World Series. You know, I'll watch that, and I'll get Jean's laptop. I'll get my wife's laptop, and I'll play on there. But I hadn't played on her laptop in a long time. So at like 5 of 9, I'm going to, all right, I'll go on and I'll sign in and I'll play a heads-up match because I really wanted to play a heads-up match, you know. And it says new software to load. And yeah, I'm like, oh, no. So it starts to load it, right? And I'm like, all right, it's going to make it. Then it comes on and it says unable to find software.
Oh, no.
I'm like, oh, no, it's like 3 of 9. I'm not going to make it. God, I wish I hadn't made it. But unfortunately, the computer was good enough to find it and get it and load it, and I ended up playing, winning my first match, and then that's when all the trouble started. For those of you who didn't play, we had about, I don't know, like Scott said, maybe 1,310 people who didn't play but signed in to play. So we had like 600 tables of dead stacks playing each other.
Yeah.
And when you start with 1,500 chips and the blind started... you know,
10-20
or whatever the hell it was, you know, it takes 3 hours just to get them to get all in. So I kept emailing support saying, you know, I'm the host of this tournament and you guys need to help us out here because, you know, we have all these dead stacks and it's not going to end until like 7 in the morning unless you guys get rid of them. So I had the email here, Scott. I have to read it real quick.
Okay.
This is the first email I got back from them. Hello, Christopher. Thank you for your email. It is best to think of a player who is sitting out as simply folding every hand. This is a completely legal tactic, as it is up to any individual player to decide his own best strategy. There is no rule, for obvious reasons, against folding every hand. A player who is sitting out actually puts his opponents at a significant advantage. The player who is sitting out is still forced to pay his blinds and antes and is never able to build his stack. On rare occasions, a player might blind off into a cash position, but players who employ this strategy are usually far worse off than those who play their best game. You may wish to read more regarding sitting out in tournaments here, and then they gave me a link.
Very good.
If both players in this heads-up tournament are sitting out at one table, the system will eventually destroy the table after 200 hands have been dealt with no action from either player, and then we are sorry, yada, yada, yada. Well, that clearly did not happen.
It did not happen.
I literally watched like 10,000 hands of people playing, not playing at all, and I think it had something to do with the fact that it would have culminated at the end of the tournament, heads up, and since they were both out, it's like a glitch in the system or something. I don't know, but
I mean, there's some chatter on our forum previous to this because I think some people anticipated this was going to happen. And they found some stuff from previous support, and you know, I don't know whether it actually came from official source or not. But I said that even in a heads up a tournament, that it would be 250 hands, and they would disable it or break the table down and give the player who had the most chips moving on. So, but obviously none of that stuff happened.
Yeah.
And it took 2 hours before the second round matches started, and of course my second round match, Chris, I get a dead stack.
Me too.
Which is fine. I'm doing my part. You know, I sit there and just push raise for, until I get my carpal tunnel and move on. And then I had to wait another hour and a half or so for my third round match, in which I finally, I was playing really good, I thought, too, Chris. I have a great strategy now.
Uh-huh.
And had a great first match, and I got some kudos from my opponent, and played the same style in the third match. Got this exact situation I wanted. Flop two pair against his over pair. Got him all in. He hits a five out on the river. Boom. Gone. Wow. Did I cry?
Probably a little, right?
You're right. I slapped my hands really loud enough to scare my wife as we were watching Amazing Race because I was so upset that I put this much time in this thing.
Yeah.
And then got booted on when I caught him in the trap that I've been setting since 9 o'clock. But then I'm like, you know what? Hey, woo! Because if I win this thing, I'm going to be up to 7 a.m. So
yeah, and that's how I felt. actually, in my fourth match, I went up against a guy, and I really was dominating him. I was outplaying him significantly, and I had people watching and saying, "Wow, put him away," because I was really outplaying him. And then there was a hand where I had ace king, and he raised, and every time he had raised, he always had some sort of ace. So I had a feeling that for sure that I was going to have this guy dominate, so I shoved, thinking he'd call because he was kind of short-stacked. He called with, of course, the Cosenza, ace-10, and rivered a three-outer Broadway on me to cripple me. And then I thought, you know what, if I win this match, I'm going to be playing until 7 a.m., so the next ace I'm shoving, and if I lose, I lose. And I did. I shoved with ace-8 and or ace-5, I think, and the guy had 9-10 and called and spiked a 9, and I was out. And I was actually grateful to be out. But if we were playing for real money at that point, you know, actual tournament where we were playing at normal times in the day and everything, that wouldn't have happened that way. So,
yeah.
But I was just glad that it got over with, to be honest. And then I had emailed them at like 1:30 to support people again and said, hey, can you guys just keep monitoring this until you get all the dead stacks out? Because I'm just going to keep reminding you after every round. And then sure enough, at 7 a.m. this morning, I get my response. Oh, sorry, the tournament's over. And I'm like, hello? But, you know, while everyone was waiting around, you know, people were doing things like playing at the table. And I know that our hotline caller, Greg from Houston, made the best of his time. And so did I. I mean, I played with play money. But, you know, just waiting around and seeing what people play like for play money. And but anyway, you call the hotline, 813-448-1120. And we use it. We'll send you something nice. But let's see what Greg did last night while he was waiting around for his next match.
Hey, Chris and Scott. This is Greg in Houston, Texas. I just wanted to let you know that I, along with about 700 other people or so, have been waiting for almost 2 hours to play in the heads-up tournament. Not sure what was up with how they started that, but while I was waiting, I decided to play a little micro-limit Omaha 8 or better. And I just thought you might find it interesting that I flopped quads not once, but twice in a row. The first hand was I just happened to have an ace in my hand, and up came ace. And, of course, I checked it and didn't get a whole lot of action, won another bet or so. And then the very next hand, I was in the blind, and I had an 8 in my hand. So I was in there, and the flop came 8-8-8. And, again, I checked and, again, won a couple of bets. Didn't make really any money on it, but flop quads twice in a row. So still waiting to see if I can play my first match in this tournament.
See, you know, Chris, I like this call.
Okay.
Because I expected last night to get a flurry of calls to the hotline, full of belly aching, oh, you guys suck. How can you let this go on? I hate you. Because I was getting that from, like, multiple platforms last night, Skype and Facebook, and I'm surprised people didn't knock on my door, throw eggs at me. But, you know, this guy's like, you know, all right, this is terrible, but you know what? I'm going to go out and do something. I'm gonna occupy myself. And he goes out and flops quads twice.
Man, that's huge. In a row, too, back to back.
Never in Fasto's life.
Oh, man, that was remarkable.
But Greg, all right, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I did the same thing. I was like, well, I might as well just play at the other tables.
Yeah.
You know? And, of course, I had no money in my account because I went bust. Like I said, I'm on the worst run of my life right now. So I played for play money, just fooling around, seeing how people would play, and occupied my time. But I'm happy Greg made some cash while he was waiting.
Well, Greg, we appreciate you calling. We appreciate you having good sense of humor. And we are going to send you a hat from twiff.com. Send us your address to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll ship that out. And you can use that for the actual Apes event, which is November 11th, to vomit in if you happen to get caught playing a number of dead stacks or waiting for dead stacks to finish off. And everybody else, remember to call the hotline, 813-448-1120, and please make it constructive. Please.
Speaking of constructive, let's hear the Anti-Up News Desk.
Heads Up International Incorporated, a Canadian poker media company, has signed a letter of intent to buy World Poker Showdown, a tour that features poker events throughout the Caribbean and Latin America. Terms were not disclosed, but World Poker Showdown's next event is in Costa Rica in early November.
Now you know those people. Don't you know the World Poker Showdown people?
Yeah, I've talked to some of the guys that run it a couple times, and Jody Russell, who runs our Antia Poker Cruise, coming up March 25th to 29th, details at antiamagazine.com/cruise, has dealt on one of the events there, too. So, you know, they got a good group of events down there, and it sounds like this little marriage here is going to help reduce some redundancies between the two, and we'll see what it makes.
The Senate Finance Committee is considering a proposal from Democratic Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon to use taxes from legalized internet gambling to offset the cost of health care reform, the Las Vegas Advisor reports. Wyden's proposal would use money from the pending Internet Regulation, Consumer Protection, and Enforcement Act to subsidize health care for low-income families.
Wow, do you have the national anthem on cue there, Chris?
I should, man, because I tell you what, that's just beauty right there.
I love it. You know, hey, you guys want that public option? All right, you got to give us some internet gambling so we can pay for it. I love it.
You know, and it makes sense, too. I mean, you have lotteries that fund education. Let have internet gambling fund health care. What's the difference?
You know, and this is exactly the stuff that happens in politics. You know, you've got something where everybody says, there's no way we're going to be able to pay for this. And then you've got a bunch of people on the side like, well, I know one way.
Yeah. And it's always quid pro quo.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, I don't know how much luck Mr. Wyden's going to have with this, but we salute you, sir.
Yes.
All right, and then finally, Sally Ann Boyer, a woman who won an undercard event at the 2007 World Series of Poker, has sued Harris and the World Series of Poker Academy for using her name and likeness without permission to promote the Academy, according to UPI. Boyer says the Academy claims that her win was largely because of her attendance at an Academy prior to the event, but Boyer says she only briefly attended the Academy. Harris and the Academy had no comment.
Do you think, like, someone might sue us if we said that they were successful because of listening to Annie Up?
That's a good question.
Of course, we know no one is successful because they're listening to Annie Up, so we would never attempt that.
We're probably in the clear on that, I think. But, you know, I think, you know, again, I don't remember. I mean, we went to the World Series Poker Academy once, and I don't remember whether we had to sign anything. But most of these places have some kind of thing when you register that, you know, they can use your likeness. And, you know, you're essentially signing away your rights.
Yeah.
To attend one of these things. So, I'm not trying to get in the middle of this fight here and, and have Sally Ann Boyer, you know, go all medieval on my ass. But my guess is that she probably did sign something. Now, is it right for them to go and, you know, over-promote something if she really did only show up for a couple hours? But interesting, though. Interesting.
All right, well, we'll tell you what, Scott. I'll let you read the mailbag from Houston, Texas, because it's an all-Houston show or something.
Representing in the Lone Star State today.
Representing, baby. But why don't you take care of this for me today?
All right, comes from Rick Dougherty from Houston, Texas. He says he just experienced the following in a double or nothing sit-and-go in Poker Stars. Two players had already been knocked out. Three more to go before the top five get paid. Blinds are 25 to 50. A 400 chip short stack opens for 200. And I'll pause for laughter. And it folds around to Rick here in the small blind with 1,700 chips and pocket kings. He raises to 400 to get the rest of the short stack's chips in the pot. This should be a good scenario for everyone at the table. But no, Rick says. The big blind goes all in with 5,400 in chips. Of course, the target short stack folds and lives to play a future hand with his remaining 200 chips. Rick, of course, folds too. The big blind proudly shows ace-ace. Rick says, idiot! Why chase the short stack away with an outrageous raise? Why not just call to get him in and then go all in after the flop? Am I not looking at this correctly? Is he not looking at this correctly, Chris?
No, I don't think he is. There's still three people to get out, and I would want a bigger stack if I could. If I had aces, I would want to get that dead money, and I would re-raise. I don't care about knocking one guy out. I'm going to knock him out anyway. I'm trying to get your stack, too, and then I know I could just basically go away like the 400,000 Brazilians in our heads-up match last night. I don't think he's looking at it right. I mean, if I had aces, I would do the same thing there. There's still three more people to knock out, and there's plenty of poker left. I'm going to take my aces and try to knock you out too. So I don't feel like Rick's looking at it the right way. But that's just me. You could probably think differently. I don't know.
No, I agree with you. I do think the all-in 5,400 raise was probably irresponsible from the aces. I mean, the reason, I mean, I totally agree with you on why you would do it. I mean, right, we're still too far from the money, but you want to get some chips out of your aces.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're not going to get any chips by going 5,400 here. So that's the only problem I have with it. But this, we're not in the bubble here. So when we get to the bubble, it's a completely different animal.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got a lot of play left here in this tournament. So,
I think the raise was ridiculous, the amount he raised. But, yeah, I'm definitely raising my hand there. Plus, I'm even out of position in the blind. So, I mean, I want to either take it down now or knock out this one guy who, you know, if he's not going to call your 200, you know, I mean, if he didn't call this guy's all-in with just 200 left, he wasn't going to call your Razor Kings anyway. So what's the difference? You know, either way, that guy's folding. So I would want to get as much as I could with my aces. So I just, you know, that's how I feel. But, yeah, the 5,400 shove is probably a bit much, but whatever.
And what about this 400 chip guy that opens for 200?
I know, and then folds for 200.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. Unfortunately, our friend Rick got rattled by this chain of events, was the fourth player to go out, so he did not win any money in the tournament. But, Rick, you know where you can win stuff, and that's by sending us a mailbag question, and we will be happy to send you a Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com. And send your future mailbags to podcast@anyupmagazine.com. And you too can win swag even when you lose.
Last week, right along with Columbo, our one-minute mystery spinoff, we had in part 16, the blinds were 800 and 1,600 with a 200 ante. And we had a stack of 27,000 with about 70 players or so left. We opened on the button for 4K with ace 3 of spades. And the big blind re-raised all in for 23.5K. And he wants to know what we should do. Scott?
I'm folding here. We're raising for the button, so we have a wide range of hands that we can be doing with this. And I know big blinds that like to defend their big blinds and realize that. And by putting pressure on, they'll get people like me to fold. And you know what? He wins. He's right.
Yeah.
You know, I just... there's a lot of hands that we're behind here. I don't see why we need to play for stacks right now. If we fold this hand, we still got 23K left. You know, it's not a great stack, but is ace-3 really the hand you want to go to war with? I don't think so.
Exactly. That's my point there. I mean, you can't call, and even if we are ahead at this point, it's probably like a 60-40 situation. Do you really want to come this far in this tournament doing this well with an M still of like 8 or whatever? You know, to go out this way, no way. There's no way I'm calling. I don't think it's that close. Like you said, you still have 23,000 left, you know, with 1,600 blinds and 200 ante. So I'm folding as well.
Excellent. On the forum, consensus was leaning towards folding, but a close call.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I mean, I can see it both ways, I guess, but really, I mean, I know I'm in the money, but I just don't. I the only way I'm ahead here is if the guy has ace-deuce or if he's got some sort of king-something here. But even then, you're still only like 60-40. So I agree you got to fold. So let's
And I think what we're seeing on the forum at AnnieAtMagazine.com/forum is the division between our math players and our field players.
Yeah.
And Chris and I, you and I are more field players.
Yeah, just don't feel me at the table.
Yeah, yeah, really. Particularly with, projectile fluids. But the folks on the forum that I think chimed in here were more of the math players. So interesting, different ways of looking at it. So.
Yeah. All right, well, let's hear what happens.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and welcome to episode 17 of Ride Along with Columbo, where the big blind comes over the top of our button raise. I think this is a particularly hard decision. Button raises get little respect, and someone has decided to put us to a big test for some reason.
I had nothing to go on.
In the end, after my timer is all but gone, I decide to fold. I figure, what can I hope to gain here other than getting lucky? I am still lamenting my decision when this time in the cutoff I get the exact same hand. I make the exact same raise, all my opponents fold, and I pick up the blinds and annies. Well, the levels go up again, and I still have 25k in chips, but the ante alone is 250. I continue to steal, even from under the gun, with queen-jack off and getting away with just enough to stay alive. We're down to 5 or 6 tables now, so close, yet so very far. I fold the next 6 or 7 hands, and I'm on the button again. It's folded all the way around to me, and I have 9-9 with 27k in chips. Now, do you want to shove the 27k? Or do you want to make a 2.5x raise to 5k? And if you decide to make the raise instead of the shove, what's your action versus someone coming over the top?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
All right, Scott, it's about time that I think AJ Benza has his say in a public forum other than his blog. As you know, he was dismissed by the GSN executives from our fantastic Favoritely Good show. I'm not sure if that's even a word, but...
it is now.
It is now. High Stakes Poker, I'm a big fan of it, and Season 6 was coming up soon, and they canned our good friend AJ Benza, and rumor has it they did it in favor of having a woman in the booth. And now it looks like, we're not even sure if a woman's going to be in the booth or whatever. So, he's been waiting around in the green room like a true NEUP national, waiting around for his heads-up match. So I had a chance to interview him earlier in the week. So it's just me, no Scott this time. We apologize, but Scott was on the road, and this is the only time we could do the interview. So without further ado, here's my conversation with AJ Benza. How surprised were you that GSN wanted to replace you for upcoming Season 6?
Well, I wasn't terribly surprised because I don't think that they were running things properly over the last couple of seasons in terms of taking that long hiatus between season 4 and season 5. Was that between 3 and 4? I'm forgetting now. It's been so long, but I mean, one hiatus was a year long.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if you know this. A hiatus in Latin means go fuck yourself. I don't know if you know that. But, I'm not too surprised. There's a lot of people at the head of that network that are new there that apparently, according to some deep throat informers on my blog, don't know what they're doing and don't know how to do it. The only stand-up guy I can say that I've spoken to there is Barry Nugent, who I go way back with at E. He told me flat out that he thought it would be me and Gabe and maybe there'd be a chick down the floor doing play-by-play with, for the 3 days the guys play the game in Vegas, but it turned out not to be. So, you know, in this day and age of showbiz, nothing surprises me, man. There's just a lot of people who want to put the fingerprints on the show, but to put your fingerprints on something that was number one for 5 years, that's like asking, you know, it's just like I wrote in a column. If you get the best pizza in Brooklyn for 5 years running, don't start adding pineapple to it, man. You got the best pizza. Just, you know, people are happy and let it go. So whatever it is, it is. That's the way it falls out.
Well, you know, after talking to you the last time, you know, we knew that GSN had this new stance about trying to increase its female viewers. Did that thought ever cross your mind that they were going to put a woman across from Gabe like that? I mean, how could that even be a part of their thinking?
I don't think GSN even knows what they want to do anymore about viewership. From what I've heard now, the last I heard, this comes from another anonymous deep throat source, that I've heard that Kara Scott is going to be tableside and Gabe is going to do the commenting alone. The first rumor was that Vanessa Russo would be in the booth with him, which I don't think that would have made things fairly easy for Gabe, because I didn't really have a poker opinion, obviously, being the neophyte that I am. But any poker pro in a booth with another pro is going to have opinions. And when you put those two opinions against each other versus a producer outside the other side of the glass who's an expert in poker, it can make for a long, long season. So I don't think GSN wants to go the girl route. I just think they want, for some odd reason, I'm not taking it personally, because I don't think they, obviously the crowd has spoken and they know that I was worth something on that show. I just think they want to shake it up because the chick that runs GSN, Kelly Good, maybe she wants a female in there. I mean, she gave Carney Wilson, who's a, God knows, she's been a train wreck for a long time. She gave her a show hosting, the Newlywed Game, which is going to have some homosexual relationship marriages involved. I don't know what their plan is at the network. I really don't. But nothing against Kara Scott. She knows what she's doing. She's good at what she does. I continually don't understand people in this business after being in it for 15 years who just want to screw with something that's been working. You know, one wheel didn't fall off. I will admit that last year's season was weaker than most, but that's because the poker players themselves weren't putting their money where their mouth was. We had a lot of grinders. Outside of Tom Dwan, there really wasn't a more than one or two guys you could say really had let their hair down and played hard poker. So, if that's the case, if the season's rating dipped last year, which they did a little bit, you can't blame it on the commenting. And chicks aren't going to tune in to watch a poker game just because Kara Scott is commenting tableside.
Right.
I mean, does that make sense? Would a chick watch a poker game because a chick is commenting tableside?
No.
I don't think so. I mean, I've done a show with her in the past. She's a pretty girl. But from what I understand is, pretty girls like to see train wrecks when it comes to another girl on TV. Pretty girls don't want to see pretty girls. But my wife watches reality TV because the girls in the shows are train wrecks, not because they're pretty and classy like Kara Scott is.
Right.
So I don't get that notion at all.
Well, you brought up Gabe Kaplan a couple of times now already. Have you talked to him about this? What does he have to say about this?
Yeah. You know, well, Gabe keeps things close to the vest. He's still got a job, and he's damn good at his job. And him and I are as close as you can be. We have dinner occasionally, and we email each other and stuff. But you know, Gabe told me, look, he said, don't burn the Verrazano Bridge down. He says, you know, they may bring you back for season 7. And I said, you know something, I'm not trying to burn a bridge. I'm just trying to tell people, you know, I wrote a blog in which people responded in a very honest and true way. I didn't know there'd be so much vitriol. I took some of those posts down that called for, God, some people called for Kelly Good to be raped. And, some things were disgusting. So some posts I took down. Others were just plain people saying, you know, they're out of their minds and stuff. But Gabe wants to work, but it's gonna be weird because I know that Gabe likes the repartee in the booth that him and I do, whether it's a Godfather reference or just some silly Brooklyn stuff, or whatever it is. We have a connection that the public has learned to love, and now it's going to be him alone. I mean, I don't know if the show is going to go faster for Gabe with him alone in the booth commenting, or I mean, it will go faster. The day will be shorter, but it won't be as funny because he won't have a straight man to play off of. And what it comes down to at the end of the day is just really a price cut. Because I know the producer of the show, Maury Eskandani, who put the whole shebang together, he took a major haircut, financially speaking, in terms of this season. And I know that I don't get a ton of money, but I get a decent enough amount that GSN could look at it and say, hey, you know, maybe we get rid of this guy's salary, we just go with Gabe. So I think it just came down to money. It didn't come down to personality. No one ever grabbed me and took me aside and said, try doing it this way, try doing it that way, change the way you do this. So I think it's a money. I think it's a money thing, but I think it could have been done differently. I think it could have been addressed differently. I offered to take a pay cut. You know, because Carr, you have to figure if Carr Sky is going to be at the game, which goes on for 3 days long. I don't know what hotel. I think they're doing a Golden Nugget this season. If she's there for 3 days and nights, what are they going to give her? I don't know.
Yeah.
$10,000, $12,000, $10,000. I don't know. Okay, so I just don't get. She's not going to be funny, and there's not going to be that thing because it's not going to be live with her and Gabe. So
right.
It's just not going to work. I really don't think this season is going to work. I don't even. And from what I hear, I don't hear a lot of guys have lined up to play yet. So I think they're in a bind with that as well.
I have to admit, I mean, the best part about Gabe when he's on the show is playing off of what you say to him. I just can't imagine this turning out well at all.
You know, it reminded me of Dean Martin, Rowan and Martin's laughing when Gabe and I spoke, you know?
Yeah.
I was more like the, I forget his name now, they both passed, but, you know, the guy that just wanted to have fun and didn't know what the hell was talking about, and Gabe was the smart guy who knew everything about it. And that, it evolved into this thing where I became this everyman who maybe some people out there don't know the ins and outs of poker and don't know what a double belly gut buster and all that crap is. You know, I was the guy who said, what are you talking about? Is that, do I need anesthesia for that? What does that mean? You know, I think that's going to be a big loss. But, you know, what I just hate is that you talk to a man or two men in Barry Nugent, and David Schiff, and you say, look, you know, is it that important to you guys? Because you're going to really be putting me in a really bad financial situation with three kids and in this economy and Hollywood really not having many opportunities right now for a lot of people. Is it really something you need to do? Really? Really? After 5 years of good service and 5 years of number one service, do you think this needs to be done? And then for them to go ahead and do it, it got me pissed off. Now, when I get pissed off, I can burn a bridge. I can burn a fucking village down. I didn't do that. I wrote a blog. I wished them luck. I wished whoever the girl was luck. I didn't come out with two guns blazing. Believe me, I took my cap gun out. Okay.
Yeah.
When Barry Nugent calls me and says, "Hey, could you take that blog down that says this about?" I say, "Hey, could you?" Could you tell the repo man to get out of my driveway? You know, why and watch the other, pal? So he didn't get back to me on that. But I did take some messages down that were really vitriolic about what's her name? Kelly Good. I'd never met her. I don't know her. You know, it just goes to show from what I hear from inside people, there's a lot of people that they don't treat right. And I think, for the most part, High Stakes Poker was the show they knew what they were doing with because it worked itself. Even producers like Kevin Belenkov, who started off the show, would say, "Look, I had the easiest job. Once you guys got going, I had nothing to do. I didn't have to be there all day. The show just ran itself." So I don't know what their next step is. I can't see a season seven. And I don't anticipate myself being on a season seven after we had all these back and forth between me and the brass. But I don't think what I did was nasty. I don't think what I did is wrong. I think what I did is what people forget men do. When a man is wronged, you open your fucking mouth and you say, "Hey, what are you guys doing to me?"
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And that's it. And I don't know what part of the world they're from, but in my part of the world, when there's a wrong obviously occurring to you, I'd have been the same way if they were talking about replacing Gabe. I'd have been just as angry. It's just a system that worked, and they shouldn't have fucked with it, and they did, and now they're going to live with the consequences.
I heard you bring up the sense of fatherhood with these guys, appealing to their sense of that, and the responsibilities you have to your children. And obviously, when you said to them, "Is it really something you have to do?" and they obviously cut you. So, but what was the reaction to that? I mean, hearing that, it's not every day that someone will make that kind of appeal. What was the reaction when you said that?
Well, I said to those guys, "Let's talk man to man, father to father," and they said, "Absolutely." I said, "You're gonna." I mean, without putting my financial situation on the table, I said, things aren't well here. You know, I waited a long time for this show. This is my big money show. I have side gigs that pay a buck or two that I do okay with. I do some mixed martial arts fighting and analysis in South Florida and stuff like that. But I said, you know, this is my main job. So, you know, let's talk as fathers. They said, great, let's do that. And when you say that to a man, you kind of think he's going to come back and really be honest with you and take things for what they are. But when the news got back to me that they passed, that they're going to not go with me, it didn't come from them. They called the manager. The manager calls me. See, that way Hollywood, very few Hollywood people do it man to man. I went to them as a man, but they don't come back to me as a man. They come back to me from the back door so my manager can give me the bad news. You know, and at that point, what a man's left to do is look at the faces of his wife and children and say, "These motherfuckers, they just did this to me. For what? I mean, I gave them a number one show. I offered a pay cut. Is it a personal thing?" They said no. I said, "Okay, well, I tried to keep my blog not personal." And the more I talk about it, I will get personal because I'm a Sicilian guy.
Yeah.
But I never took it to that extreme. But I don't think I'm not going to sit here and say that the show won't be number one again. It certainly should be or could be because people love poker. But the combination is dead. And I said what I really said was I wrote a letter to Barry Nugent after this whole thing was over, and I said, you know, what you really had to have done, I said, after all the Godfather references, you guys just didn't get the joke. You weren't in on it. All you have to say is, tell AJ, we always liked him. It was strictly business. And I would have gotten it. You would have sounded like Tessio talking to Hagen, and I would have gotten it, and it would have been okay. But to not even get to, and then when I sent them the letter, and when I erased some, vitriolic statements on my blog, there wasn't a letter back. I wrote a letter to GSN apologizing for what some of the bloggers that I have no control over said about the network. There was no letter back to me. So, as far as I'm concerned, they can go fuck themselves now.
All right, well, then that answers my next question. Because I was going to say, you know, a couple of years ago when they went on that, quote, hiatus, you know, they ultimately didn't because of the outrage of the fans. And since you had this huge outpouring of support on your blog, this isn't a case where the fans can save your job, or it's definitely gone too far as you're concerned?
I don't know. This morning I heard news that Kara Scott has the job table side. Well, maybe I shouldn't have said they can go fuck themselves if I still have a chance to get the job. I really don't think so. I think these people think they're so big that, you know, a few hundred people who sign a petition or write on a blog, as much sense as those things make in life, you know, let's remember too. I mean, a number one show on GSN is not 12 million people.
Right.
A number one show on GSN is about, you know, 300,000 people. So if 1,000 people, 2,000 people have some shitty to say about the move, it's going to affect their show's ratings, and it's going to affect their advertising. And if PokerStars.net decides we don't need this shit anymore, then the show's done.
Because yeah.
That's the only show, that's the only commercial that supports the show. So, at this point, no, I don't consider them reconsidering. I don't consider them being a season 7. And I consider, like I told Nugent, I said, you know what just happened? This is a big Nagasaki bomb. I'm gone. The show's changed radically, and every one of you executives will be in different networks in the next 3 to 4 months. So no one really cares what happens to the show. It's like dropping off a baby at the church steps and driving your car away. That's what this was like. If they just don't care, because they're all going to be gone from that job. The GSN is like a lymph node for executives. You get there, no one stays more than 3 or 4 years. You get there and you're gone. So the decisions they make, they don't really think about the repercussions of the person they're firing, or they just think about it as, let me get my fingerprints on this show so I can take this on my resume to my next job and say, hey, I changed High Stakes Poker into this. Well, that's going to be a black mark on their resumes.
Yeah.
Because High Stakes Poker will not be as good.
So if we get a little retrospective here, what are you going to miss most about High Stakes Poker?
You know, we had a lot of fun. Me, Gabe, and Maury, and a guy named Phil Smith, who was in the booth with us producing. We had a lot of inside jokes, a lot of fun. After five seasons, you know each other's. You know, you get to know each other's family stories, and during downtime, we'd always have dinner or lunch together. And Maury was always good enough to pay. We'd have fantastic dinners out between seasons. It was a lot of fun, and really, I'm going to miss guys like Sammy Farhard. You know, I love his. I mean, obviously, his commentary is always going to be out there. I can find it wherever I want. But there was little inside jokes. It was a world that I never thought I'd be involved in. And the first season, I was petrified that I was involved in it because I didn't know much about it. And I got to learn about it. And I'm going to miss that. I love gambling. I can identify with people who love to gamble. So hosting a show like that gave me a little bit of a fix. Gambling fix. So that fits, maybe I'll try a hookers now. I don't know. No, I'm kidding. That's a joke. I'll miss the fix. I'll miss Gabe because I gotta be honest with you. When I heard I was working with Gabe Kaplan, I said, you know, in 1 year, I've worked with Sylvester Stallone and Rocky Balboa and Gabe Kaplan in High Stakes Poker. And I don't think they were two bigger stars in the 70s in terms of film and television.
Right.
So I said, this is like my childhood coming right back up. Right back up my spine, and it was, just to hear Gretel. Gabe has a million Hollywood stories that he tells you. He's got stories that go back to, Red Skelton. I mean, Gabe knew everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody knew Gabe. So he has stories for stories, Ed Sullivan stories, Frank Sinatra, you know, Don Rickles. I mean, we'd sit down and we knew a lot of the same characters that were like, you know, criminal types in Brooklyn So it was just a fun time. Every time there was a downtime, we always had to be cracking up about something, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so that, I'll miss that. But mostly, I gotta be honest, I'll miss the money.
Yeah.
They did pay me well. For a network that is not known to pay well, that was paid well. And so I gotta get that money back. And I think what this has done to me is wake up the sleeping giant in me I've always been a writer at heart. Writing is my passion. But once I started to make TV money, I got lazy with writing because TV money is easy to make and it's greater.
Yeah.
So I got lazy. My writing muscle died, almost died. I'm resuscitating it now, and I have a novel I'm writing starting now, and you know, I'm just going to see if there's some interest in that, and it could be the best thing that happened to me in terms of that, because really, I'm not going to get any thinner. I'm not any better looking. I'm not going to grow any more hair. I'm not going to be Tom Bergeron 5 years from now. So my best bet is to sit behind a keyboard and pound out some stories and books and novels and what have you. That's probably like my best bet anyhow. So this could all be a blessing in disguise. And for that, I kiss all those people on the lips if that happens that way, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess I'll wrap it up now with you if you want. And I realize, too, that one thing that this is going to miss significantly to me is you were like a one-man marketing crew for this show. You never saw Gabe on TV talking about it. You never heard of him on a podcast touting the show. But you were always out there, always touting the show, and they're going to miss that. So, you know, now that you've done that and that's for nothing now, do you have any regrets about this?
No, I don't, because I was doing my job. Every time I went on a podcast or talked to you guys or whatever, I looked upon it as saving my job and saving my... I really think the last year what I did, my personal PR campaign to save High Stakes, I think I did that. I think I made that happen. So I feel good about that. But, I wrote them that. I said that. I said, do you realize that I'm the only person that's ever gone on podcasts, on radio interviews from people that you would know? You know, Poker 2+2 forums used to hate me. Now there's a petition they're going around. One guy wants to send out T-shirts at the World Series of Poker that say bring back AJ. I've never had a publicist from GSN call me to set up a radio interview. I've done everything myself. I said, you've had nothing but inept people in your PR department. And Barry Nugent said to me, you're right, and those people are all fired. There was never anybody good when you were on the air to promote the show. I said, well, okay, so you got rid of all those people, but you're getting rid of me too. Yeah. I don't understand. I'm not a publicist. I'm the host. So, the show would have kept going, but I did my part. But basically what I was doing was I was promoting a show, but I was also, I looked upon it as trying to save my ass with that show because I always had an inkling that, I don't think poker is not at its apex anymore. Poker, if there were a graph in front of us, definitely on the down slope now in terms of televised poker.
Right.
It's still viewed by many, many, many people, and God knows it's downloaded by even more people, but I still think that it's on the downslope. So I don't think there's not going to be any more new, great, successful poker shows. I doubt that seriously. I think the formulas they had, whether it's a WPT or a high-stakes poker, or poker after dark, that's basically the formula that worked. There's not going to be a new one that works. I looked upon that as saving my ass and keeping my name out there in the poker world. But I don't foresee myself being on a poker show. I think I'd work. It only worked because I was with Gabe, and he was able to be the funny guy off of my straight man. That's the reason why him and I work well together. If I knew a lot about poker, me and Gabe would have butted heads and it wouldn't have worked at all.
Yeah.
The fact that I knew shit about poker is what made it work.
Well, you are going to be missed, my friend, and I really appreciate you taking some time to talk to me today.
No problem. I appreciate all the support you give me, Chris. Thanks a lot, pal.
Hi, this is Shannon Elizabeth, and you are listening to the Anti-F PokerCast.
Chris, the nation has responded. We're getting flooded with hands of the week. About half of them are good. A lot of them are no limit hold'em hands, and that's what our good friend Lee Child specializes in. So we'll save those until we can bring him back on the show, hopefully very soon, hopefully next week. In the meantime, hey, I get to pick the hand of the week, so I'm going to pick a limit Omaha 8 hand.
Oh, great.
See, you thought the punishment you had last night was waiting for your next heads-up event. Little did you know that the next day you were going to have to analyze a limit Omaha 8 hand.
You know, I'm going to start sending in my own hands so I can get a $10 staking package.
You're good to go then.
Yeah, I'm ready to go with this limit 08 crap.
All right, this comes from a longtime listener, Michael Myers from Oakland, California. And he's been playing it's a 4-8 live limit Omaha 8 game at the Oaks Card Club out in Emeryville, California.
Yes.
It's got a half kill. This is my bread and butter here, Chris.
Yes.
I wish I could get a 4-8 limit with a half kill around here. But kill is not in effect on this hand, so it's 4-8. And our hero is in mid position, one limper to him, and he looks down at deuce, tray, 4-5. The 4 and 5 are diamonds.
Okay.
I'm going to put you on the spot here because you hate this game.
I do hate this game.
So just babble some weirdness, and I'll tell you what I would do.
Well, I do like 4 babies in this situation and 4 wheel cards. You know, if an ace comes, you're golden, and if it doesn't come, but some other little cards come, you can make a baby straight. And so I guess I would just call. I think I would call with this hand. I wouldn't raise with it, but you might raise with it because you're pretty smart at this game. But I would probably call with it and see what happens.
Here's the thing. I've been reading a lot of different stuff on Omaha 8 because it's a game I really like now. And the folks that have done the computer simulations, they really show that a hand without an ace really is a disadvantage. There are some exceptions, of course, but generally speaking, you want to have an ace in this game.
Yeah.
And this, I think, might be one of those exceptions because, you know, you're all connected there. And like you said, if an ace comes, then boom, you're pretty good if you get those couple O's. And then the fact that you get those diamonds to help you out.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a flyer on this in a live game.
Okay, so we're in agreement then, right? We're in agreement.
Yeah, you know, and I guess, you know, here's the thing. I like raising with my subpar hands in Omaha 8.
Okay.
And just calling with my good hands. And I guess I can't really explain why I like to do that, but sometimes you chase out some of the bad money.
that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, if an ace comes or something like that, then people might put you on ace deuce, and it's a little deception there. But, you know, I'll probably call here, but our hero raises, and I can't really fault him with that either, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I like I said, I think that it could be a raising hand. I mean, it just depends on your players. The other thing, too, is if no one's calling your raise, you know, if you don't get a lot of callers, then there's probably not a lot of aces out right there, and then you might get one on the flop. So that's a good thing, too, to get some info that way. So I don't fault a raise either. Just me, I suck at this game, so I'm probably just calling.
All right, so our hero raises. The guy in the hijack position, who is a prop player for the club and very good, calls. Both blinds call, and the limper calls as well.
Wow.
Yep. Says the small blind and the big blind are pretty loose, and the limper guy just sat down, so no information on him. So we got five to the flop, Chris, about okay. $35 in the pot. Squiggly 35, we'll say, too. He doesn't say that, but I'm using that my newfound knowledge. Squiggly 35 in the pot. The flop comes ace of diamonds, six of clubs, 10 of diamonds.
Wow. That's a great flop for us.
Well, I don't know about great, but yeah, very good. I'll give it a VG.
Well, we got the nut low draw. We can't be counterfeited on our low if you know what I mean. And then the other thing too is we got diamonds as a backup in case nobody has diamonds for the high. So I mean, okay, not great. Okay, a great would be deuce, 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 and somebody holds pocket aces in there. I mean, but I'm just saying, you know, it's a pretty damn good flop for the fact that you raised with 2, 3, 4, 5 and got the nut low draw and a backdoor flush. I mean, not backdoor, but a flush draw as well. Not a great one, but he got one.
Right, right.
So no, I'm happy with it.
I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you can't expect to flop a great hand often. So, I mean, as far as possible flops, this is a pretty good one. So
I'm
happy. I think you're happy, and it sounds like Michael here is happy too. It's folded to him, and he bets, and everyone calls, which he says is pretty standard in this game.
Yeah.
All right. Builds a pot. I mean, got lots of outs here, and you know, we're in a fairly good position, I think.
Yeah, that's sweet.
All right, the turn. Jack of spades. So that makes our board ace of diamonds, six of clubs, 10 of diamonds, jack of spades.
Boo!
Yeah, see, this is where Omaha 8 kind of drives people like you crazy, I imagine.
This is why I hate the game.
This is like, you know, getting that, just like getting the Jack and Raz.
Yeah, exactly. Both these games were invented by Satan. Raz and Omaha 8 are, you know, dealt in the kitchen, Hell's Kitchen. So, but you know what, though, Scott? I'm curious to see what you'll say here, but I wonder if, I don't know. I mean, I think I would still be betting on the calm here because I still got diamonds as a backdoor in case it's not that, which I never think of as that as an out for me because obviously someone's probably got the nut diamonds. But, you know, you still got any one of those wheel cards come up, you got the nuts, and any 7 or 8 comes up, you got the nut low. And the likelihood of someone else having 2, 3, 3, 4, or 4, 5 in their hand or whatever is not as good as them having ace-deuce like normal people. So, I don't know. I think I represent strength. I might bet again if it checks to me.
Okay, and it does check to us. And, you know, here's the thing. The reason I don't want to bet here is because I'm still on the comm, and, you know, we have 4 other people in this hand. Obviously, the people checked.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really only worried about a couple more here. But I don't want to get into a raising war here.
Okay.
You know, if somebody's trying to drive out the low draws, they're definitely going to be raising here, even if they don't have much other than maybe an ace here, you know, to get those lows out so they don't chop the pot. And so to me, I'm going to check here. I got to think that, you know, there might be some money in. I'm fine calling, obviously, if there's some bets here. But I would rather not get too much money in right now. Because I can't be confident that if my diamonds get there, that's good either. So
yeah,
at this point, I'm really only counting on the low half of the pot.
Hey, let me ask you, would you call 2 bets cold now? Say you check, and then it goes bet raise.
That's a good question. Because
that could happen. That's what you're kind of setting up for what could happen.
Yeah, I think I probably would.
Okay.
That was a borderline call, but I don't want to be the one that creates that situation, I guess is what I'm saying.
All right. The reason why I was thinking of it as a defensive bet, kind of, you know, representative strength, I could very easily have ace, king, queen in my hand and have Broadway now. So I was thinking of it as a defensive bet, but I could also think of if I check and it goes bet raise and then everybody calls and it gets back to me and I call, then the guy who bet out now makes it 3 and then they cap it. Then it's like, oh my God, I'm betting four bets here. That's $32 on this street just to hopefully make the low, you know. So I wasn't sure. I thought maybe a defensive bet would take care of that. So I really don't know what the hell I'm doing in this game.
No. Here's the thing. I don't know whether a defensive bet works here because we've been leading.
Right.
So I think people are expecting us to bet, and a good player is probably going to raise, put some pressure on us. So I don't think you can kind of take that out.
Okay.
But there is some creativity here. I mean, you know, let's say we check and it gets raised and re-raised, or you know, at that point maybe. And again, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I might be interested in re-raising at that point to try to squeeze some people out.
Okay.
That's a different way to play it, but I'd rather not get into that situation if I don't have to.
All right. So let's use your line of thought and check then and see what happens.
All right. Well, I would love to do that, but our hero bet.
Damn.
Rewind. Yeah. No. So he bets the $8. The prop player in the cutoff raises.
Yeah.
All blind calls. Big blind re-raises.
Hey, that's almost exactly what I said. It got back to us with.
Yeah. The little guy gets out of the way, and now it's back into us for $16 cold on top of the $8 that we already have in there.
Wow, that's weird because that's what I was saying. What do you do? And you said that you probably would call, but you didn't want to start it. But since someone did start it, now you're still looking at two bets to call. What do you do? I guess it's such a big pot, you're probably calling now, huh?
Yeah, I think at this point, I mean, I would rather have saved myself one bet here.
Yeah.
Which is probably what would happen. I would only have to be calling, you know, 16 total rather than the 24 that I'm putting in now. And, you know, again, the limit games, you know, every bet counts. That's the whole deal of limit. So I think I just cost myself a bet here. Now, obviously, if we hit good on the river, then I'm a moron. Make more money. But our hero goes ahead and calls, as does everybody else. So four players remain going to the river, which is the deuce of diamonds.
Nice.
So ace of diamonds, six of clubs, ten of diamonds, jack of spades, deuce of diamonds on the board. Blinds check. And we look over at the prop player who's grabbing his chips, making a betting motion as if he thought that I checked. Then notices that I have not checked yet. That's what Mike says.
Wow.
All that information, Chris.
Well, if and here's the thing. Now this is a Mike Faso thing. He'll grab chips like to try to do, you know, make you not want to bet, you know, distract you from betting. So, and it's a tired move. And but this is a prop player who's, he says, pretty good. So it may be genuine here. So if I feel in my heart that it's genuine, I would let him bet it for me because I'm gonna raise it when it gets back to me, because even if I'm quartered, there's enough people in this pot, I think, where I'm still going to make a profit and not lose, because it's like four people, that, you know what I mean? So I think that if it's genuine, I'll check to him. If I think that it's just a move like Faso would make, then you know, I'm going to call. I'm going to probably bet out.
Okay.
No?
No, well, it's a tough situation, because here's where I'm looking at in the sand. This was the card that we wanted. So, you know, I got to feel that we have the low here. I can't imagine people hanging around with Trey 4 other than us. So I feel like we have half the hand locked up. I'm not confident that I have the high, though, because we just have a five high flush, really.
Right.
And with all these limpers and callers, I'm pretty sure there's another flush out there. And if there is, it's got to be better than ours, right? So we really do only have half the pot here. Now, if we're up against like a Trey 5 or something like that, then there's some extra money that we can get out of this. But, you know, if this guy is looking like he's going to bet, and he obviously raised on the turn, I'm going to let him bet here, and I'm not going to try to build this pot too high is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If it's genuine, I'm letting him bet.
And if it gets checked behind, I don't really feel like I'm losing much value here. Maybe I'm wrong.
So if you check and he bets and everybody calls and it gets to you, are you raising now because you know you've locked up half? You would, right? Because that's all, half that money's coming back to you, whatever they call.
Yeah, I think I probably would, actually.
Oh, okay.
I think when I wrote back to Michael, I probably said I wouldn't, but I was thinking I had the deuce tray low, but I got the tray four low here, and I really can't imagine anybody else has that. So I'm fairly confident I had the low, and I'm free rolling on a high. Yeah, I'll probably raise.
All right, so yeah, that's cool. So that's what I would do. If I thought it was genuine, I would check. So does he check? Does Michael check now?
All right, well, he goes through a lot of thought and consideration here, and decides to bet out the $8.
Huh.
The prop player reaching for his chips instantly folds.
Yeah, so he wanted to see a showdown.
Yep. Both blinds call, though.
Huh.
And so, you know, no extra money in the pot than what we put in, so I guess it was good that we called.
Yeah.
And the small blind shows ace, deuce, 7-10 with two clubs. Big blind has deuce, tray, king, three.
Deuce, tray, king, tray?
King, queen, sorry.
Oh, king, queen. Oh, my God. So Broadway and two pair versus our nut low and baby flush. Should we scoop?
Scoop a big pot.
That is huge.
Get the old kill button, he says, post the $6 for the next hand, and probably has a huge smile there.
Wow. That is awesome. Nice. Nice job. Yeah, it goes to show you, too, that a lot of the tells are universal. I mean, that guy reaching for his chips probably just wanted to go to showdown with his, like, you know, set or two pair or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Well, hey, Mike, appreciate you sending in the hand. Very well played, and nice big pot. But it doesn't mean it can't get bigger for you. And we'll be happy to send you a $10 online poker staking package from getastake.com. So in case you can't make it the Oaks Card Club, you can log on to PokerStars and play and make more money. and like I said, we got a lot of hands of the week, but that doesn't mean you should stop sending them in. So email them to podcast@anyupmagazine.com, and we'll break them down on a future show.
Hey, I want to thank AJ Benza for being on the show this week, and we hope to see him again in the poker world future. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.